Welcome back. Yeah, we've talked a lot today. We're coming up on our last module here.
Yep, this is it. The big show.
The big show, yeah. It's a fun module, though. We're going to be adding some AI, and we're going to be talking about some other extras we can add to the game.
Yeah, we'll discuss them. We'll leave them to you to interrupt or to implement them, you know, like the 12 sumo wrestling that we talked about earlier. Still want to see that. Or the Kinect, whoever brought up that Kinect question. Now that you know you can, I expect to see those sumos moving around with the Kinect. We'll see how that works out. We're going to break this one down into, again, assessing what we need in terms of artificial intelligence, in case you didn't know what AI stood for, and then some common pitfalls that can crop up when you're playing with AI or dealing with AI, the basics of an AI agent and what it is, and then a stepwise implementation in terms of how we set up the one that we did here, and to give you an idea of how maybe you want to build up the one that you're going to make or whatever you want to do for your games. And then tweaking it, and of course, just wrapping up today and everything that we've done, give a little brief overview. All right, so assessing what you need, we really start by, again, picking out all of the parts of your game that could benefit from artificial intelligence. So enemies, and then you may have levels of enemies. You may have like bosses versus the normal everyday grunts running around. NPCs, squad mates, critters, civilians, right? There's multiple categories of that for AI. The game's narrator, for example, could even be a possible AI entity in your game. There's a couple of those that have come out recently that I can't mention. And then there's level and map generation. You can use an AI to build levels and build better maps, or respond to the player's way of playing and generate new content ahead. That's also possible. Chat systems can have AIs. Certain games now respond to you when you type to the computer. It'll respond in case you forgot it was a computer. And it'll say, you know, good game or whatever, GG. And matchmaking system, we use AI to figure out who you should be matched against sometimes. That can be built into the game to balance different players based on their profiles and their stats and get a team together that seems to play well and then against another team that's going to give them an equal kind of a competitive action that we want. You can do AI in so many different ways, auction systems, everything else. Now, of those, which one are critical? Which ones are nice to have? Which ones really aren't required, but if you have free time and, I mean, money, why not spend it putting it into the game? Sure, that'd be fun. For example, do goldfish in a fountain really need a flocking system to avoid the players that are trying to shoot them during a bomb plant? I've seen that in a game. Did it really need to be there? Nah, whatever, maybe, maybe not, but then again...
Programmer has some extra time.
Exactly, or, you know, he was up late last night or something. Nobody else was around. Now, rank those on how complex and how many states or actions you will need for each of those AI systems, starting, of course, with the ones that are most critical. How long do you think it's going to take you to write whatever complex behaviors you want for the first boss, the second boss, and so on? How many actions does that boss have? Are you building it as a state machine? In which case, it's much easier to describe how many states and how many actions and AI shifts that the AI is going to consider to move in and out from different things. For example, Halo, my favorite one, is always explaining the grunts and the elites running around. If you scare a grunt as Master Chief, it'll freak out and run around and get all scared. And then when it finds an elite, it'll sort of nerve up and be like, oh, I'm going to get my butt kicked if I don't get back to fighting. So it'll come back after you in Master Chief. How many of those kinds of interactions, those states, those behaviors are you going to want? If you're building it as a finite state machine, you can easily detail them out so you know exactly how much work you have ahead of you to implement those things. So it's good to get all that stuff written down, get all that implemented, work it out into those steps so you have an idea of how long and how much work is involved. Or if you have multiple programmers that can do AI, how to split that across them to balance the load so everybody can get that job done on time.
Dibs on the goldfish.
Yeah, I knew you were going to take that one. So common pitfalls in AI, usually losing focus of what the point of AI is in a game. Okay, that is by far the most common. Many people love the idea of being an artificial intelligence programmer. Oh, I want to work on AI. Pretty much everybody that tries to get into the AAA industry as a programmer is like, what would you like to work on? Oh, I'd like to work on AI. I think that'd be great. That's quite common, the you know, the job role people want to work, mostly because they've never done it before and they don't understand the horrible, horrible pain that it can cause upon you in late nights of coding. But not knowing that can also mean you have, you know, that glowy eye, starlit look on you. You're going to get all this amazing stuff done, and that's just great. So, but you need to remember what the point of the AI is. The point of it is to be an opponent when we don't have one. Okay, it's, I don't have somebody to play against. It should play against me. Or I don't have somebody to play with. It's my squad mate, my co-op buddy. Fill that role. It should be decent, you know, in that role. When it's an enemy, it should put up a challenge, but not be so good that I'll never ever beat it. That just wouldn't be fun, right? It needs to present the proper amount of challenge to the player, but still be fallible. It needs to make mistakes to give the player an opportunity to capitalize on the AI's mistake, just like you would on a player. He takes a wrong turn, you've got him pinned, you cut him off, and you take him down. You want the AI to make those wrong turns occasionally. You don't want him to always make those wrong turns, then he just looks stupid. That's not good enough either. It's too easy, right? So you want that balance between believability but fallibility brought together, and that's the hard thing with AI, getting that balance. But a lot of people will lose focus on what the AI is. They'll make it too good. They'll make it cheat. They'll have more fun designing it, which is the next point, than anybody will playing it. You know, it's great to love your work. It's great to be, oh, this AI is going to be the most amazing thing ever, and you put all this work and effort into it. But really, you shouldn't have more fun designing it than everybody else in the world should have playing it. That's, you know, it's great that you enjoyed making it, but it still needs to be a good playable thing in the end. Try not to make your AI do certain things that are perceived as cheating. It's okay if it cheats. That's fine. But you don't want it to be perceived as cheating. In some games, in fact, it's not cheating, and you think people will think it is. They'll be like, oh, he's just cheating. He always knows where I am, or whatever. No, he was just randomly wandering around, and you happen to stumble into him. But because there's enemies everywhere, it feels like they always know where you are, because everywhere you go, there's an enemy, and you're like, crap, he found me again. Crap, this guy found me. Crap, that guy found me. It might be perceived as cheating because of other nuances going on, like they say over the radio, looking for the blah, blah, I think he's over here, blah, blah, and then you run into him. It sounds like they knew where you were, even though they shouldn't have, or something like that, and then the player reads more into it, perceiving it as cheating. So sometimes it's too predictable as well. Humans are great at pattern recognition. That's why we're good with puzzles and we're good with that kind of stuff. Computers are not so good at pattern recognition necessarily. We're getting better at programming them to be, but we don't want them to be too predictable. At the same time, we don't want it to be too smart for its own good, because it will exploit your game. I guarantee you that if you allow it to have all the same player actions as the player, or actions as the player, and you leave a bug or some kind of issue in there that allows the player to speed up in a certain way, running in a certain direction, your AI, if it has the capacity to, will realize that's the best way to do it, and he will do so. It will start to exploit all of your games in all of the different ways that a player could, because you accidentally wrote those bugs in there or whatever, and the AI will start to do that. Now, that being said, sometimes the AI is the best tester you can hire. If you have a learning AI that actually learns how to play better and put it in, it can show you all of the amazing things that you don't want to happen in your game. And then you can remove them from your game. So AI can be used not only as a thing to play against, it can be used as a tool to help you make a better game, to build levels for you and so on, to develop your game and roll it out. So there's lots of things that an AI can do, but you have to be careful which ones it's doing, when it's doing them, because that can be a problem as well. Now, one of the simplest forms of AI agents are known as a simple reflex agent. And what we mean by that is effectively, each agent will always have one or more sensors to perceive the world. And a reflex agent basically just responds to that sensor immediately, and that's it. Then it looks again, responds, looks again, responds, and that's all it does. It doesn't track history, doesn't remember anything, okay? It doesn't consider the impact of its actions. It just does. It's like, yeah, you know, certain evil villains in Cape Crusader kind of adventures. That's his line. I'm not the man with the plan. I just do, right? That's this kind of AI agent. They just go out, they do stuff because they see something else happening. Monkey see, monkey do, that kind of situation. And that's going to work out perfectly fine for this game. In fact, it'll work out in many games for the majority of simple AI agents. I see a bomb, I pick it up and I throw it somewhere. I see the player, I chase him down and try to beat on him, and so on and so on. I don't see the player, I stand around. Simple, reflexive actions, no depth to them. But for the majority of simple actions, that's all we need. And that's known as a reflex agent. So for our game, that simple reflex agent, going to be suitable enough. It'll work. Currently, the AI can't actually perceive the environment in any fashion. When we look at it, we're going to see that. But what it can sense is it knows where the player is at all times. Now, is that cheating? Well, no. I mean, in a sumo wrestling match, generally speaking, they know where each other are. They can hear you or see you. I mean, it's not that hard to miss a sumo wrestler on a big mat. So that's okay. We're not cheating, right? That shouldn't be perceived as cheating, that the fact that the AI knows where you are, your sumo wrestler is at all times. There's no fog of war in sumo wrestling. So that should work out just fine. So we're going to, it's going to respond to that. It's going to carry out actions based on that sense. Oh, I see you, I see you, I see you, and it's going to try to get you. That's what we want it to do. And that's about it for now. Later on, we're going to have it decide at the beginning of the match how it's feeling. Is it aggressive? Is it a little upset? Is it a little cautious? And we're going to do different strategies based on its emotion, but we'll do that at the end. For now, we just want to, you know, see what the player, where the player is, go for them, and push them out of bounds. So this is where I'm going to talk about the stepwise implementation of our AI. It's a great way to sort of build your AI up, to get it to the point where you want, and to try different things that you might want a sub-faction of your AI to do. Maybe you have, again, in Halo, you have grunts and elites and all that. They all pretty much have guns. They're all walking around. They're all shooting. But some... Like the grunts are a little weaker, a little shorter, a little faster, so they run around and do more of the flanking. The elites are a little bit bigger. They're not afraid to come up and pound on you and that. You got the guys with the shields that are always trying to take cover with that, but they'll come out in the open because they don't need the cover. They're all more or less the same, but they each have that little bit of different behavior to them just to make things work out that way. So in this case, that's what we're going to do. So stepwise implementation. The first maneuver that we want our sumo AI to do this, we're going to try to have them push the player out of the ring and win the game. And to do that, we've added that class called AI Sumo Block that inherits from the Sumo Block class, and then therefore gaining everything it had, so it has its mesh for where the mesh or where the sumo block should be in the environment, but the world matrix itself is in the Sumo Block class, and all that kind of setup is still there. We give it a new function called determine AI action, in which it calculates the vector towards the player and then takes a step. And that action was called during the update dynamics function. We saw it in there in the last module, and I said we were going to talk about it briefly in this module, and this is that time. So we're going to go look at that determine AI action step, and we're going to see what's going to happen there for this maneuver, the first maneuver being walk. So let's pop over to the code here. And I just got to get to the AI class. So if we jump into our game objects, we'll start with the header first. So in the header, and let me zoom this in there. Ooh, probably a little too far, maybe. There we go. All right, so we have this sumo block class. Extends from the sumo block, as we stated earlier. We don't worry about this behavior part now. We'll get to that at the end. But we want this determine AI action, and we need to know how much time went by in this update so that we can take the step appropriately based on the physics in the right direction. So it's going to have a maneuver state. Okay, we're going to save it in this choice variable, and that's just whatever maneuver we are going to do at the moment. And again, we're going to have walk, dodge, and push eventually. Right now, we're looking at the push state. So I'm just going to jump back there. And then we need a delay, and this delay is just going to be the amount of time we want to do this action before we decide upon doing something else. So if we jump down to our determine AI action here. Oh, and why won't you? There we go. All right, so determine AI action. Again, we're bringing in the time. We're going to take that chunk of time away from our delay before we decide a new action. And as long as, if that delay happens to be less than zero, for example, we're going to make a new choice, decide something else to do. Now, right now, we're not going to worry about this. We're going to just pretend we only have one. So we're not going to worry about how we pick between all of them. And we're going to go down to the choice that we want, which in this case is going to be push. So we need to determine the direction again between the player and the sumo AI. So in this case, sumo AI just grabs his position as a vector, and we subtract it from his target's vector position, which is the player, and that gives us that vector facing again in the direction from the enemy to the player. So now that we have that, we really just want the vector. We're going to set it as an, or sorry, as we're going to get, can't talk now. We're going to get the y value out of that and put it in this direction vector. And what we're going to do is we're going to normalize that value, and we're going to multiply it by delta time. And you can ignore this behavior for now, but it's just going to make this delta time, if it's 2 milliseconds, we're going to take a 2 millisecond step in that direction added to his position. So he's just going to march towards that enemy player. Now, later on, this behavior you can see is going to modify how hard he's going to effectively run in that. We'll see how that works later on. But really, that's all we have to do. So you're pushing, he's going to just find the direction he needs to face and move in that direction. Okay, so, and that's all there is to that part of the AI. All right, so moving on, or sorry, that was the push. I'll flip them around and do the walk in a second. But it doesn't really matter. Right now, they're both just moving in the same direction. You'll see in a minute that the difference between push and walk is really just that variable of how hard to push. So in terms of the next maneuver, we want to choose a circle strafing sort of dodge mechanic. So he's going to try to step aside and try to get out of the player's path in order to turn the tables on him and then shove him out of bounds. So if the AI is getting backed up into a corner, for example, he's almost out of the ring, he can make a sudden movement to one side, try to flip around and push the player back out.
Very tricky.
Yeah, very tricky. So right now, if you were to play it with just the one behavior, he'd literally just run it straight at you and that's it, and you would just grind on each other till one of you knocked each other out and that's it. So this is, adds a lot more depth to the game right away, and that's why we're adding this behavior, just to get that extra feel and a little bit more difficulty of when that's going to happen. Now, we don't want him always dodging. He's just going to dance around in a circle all day long, and you'll never be able to push him out of bounds. So that's not going to be very useful if he's spinning around like that constantly. So we're going to need to constantly decide when to dodge versus when to push for that AI and go back and forth. And again, that's where that delay comes in with the delta time being tracked and chewed off it. We choose a new choice, which may be dodge or maybe push again, and then keep going every couple of seconds, for example. Now, since the AI can't actually perceive the mat at the moment, we've only told him where the player is, he's not going to be doing this dodge strategically as a way to defend himself because he's almost out of the ring. It's going to be completely random. Now, what do you think? Is that good, bad? Does it even matter?
It really depends on the situation, but at this point, I think it's, you know, it's okay if he's deciding randomly what to do, right? With just these very simple behaviors.
Right. Okay, so right now, Mickey says it's not a problem. We'll go with that. We'll keep that. We'll see what comes of that in a minute. So again, we've added to the enumeration that dodge and so on, and we're just going to jump back into the code to see this second maneuver. Oh, I forgot to escape. There we go. All right, so the second maneuver, which I happen to do first in the switch case, is called dodge. It equates to a value of 1. That'll come and become important when we get to the behavior part. And again, we need to know the direction between the player and the sumo and the player. So we go ahead and take that. But what we're going to do is we're also going to cross that with the up vector. Okay, so we're going to use xm vector 3 cross for cross product. And when you cross two vectors, you get another vector that's perpendicular to the two. So if you were to just hold your hand in front of you basically and you know, make your index finger and your thumb, okay, like that effectively, the cross product is going to be effectively a third vector giving you that other axis. So what we're dealing with is I'm looking at my opponent up is this way, and when I do the cross product, I'll effectively get a vector that's perpendicular to my direction to him, and I'll be able to dodge left, or I could dodge right, depending on which way I cross the two vectors. And that's it. So that's how we're figuring out the direction that he should dodge. Probably the most simplest way you can figure that out. Just cross up, which we know is 0, 1, 0 in our world, and we know how to look at our target. So we cross those two, and bang, you can go right or left, no problem, by just using the negative version of that vector or the positive version, and that's it. So back in our code, we take that direction, of course, and we grab the value out, and we normalize it so that we don't end up going faster than we would want. So we normalize it so it's always a length of 1. We multiply it by delta time. We now took a 2-millisecond step in whatever direction that was. And again, behavior is tagged in here, and we'll see why at the end. But that is then summed to our original position. The opponent, or the sumo AI, has now stepped to the left or right to dodge the player. And when he's angry, we're going to do some extra steps down here at the bottom as well. But for now, that's it for dodge. So pretty simple. Nothing too crazy there. And I'm going to pop back over to the slides here for a second and just explain the next one. So the third maneuver in our stepwise implementation is going to be a harder push. I already went over push by accident, but effectively walk is the same as push. In essence, though, the maneuver is simply a copy and paste of that walk job, but we're now going to do 2 times the force, or a variable times the force that we'll see when we get to a behavior. So the side effect of adding this behavior, though, to the AI agent is that it's now less likely to choose dodge, right? Because now we have more behaviors and we're randomly choosing. So he could walk, he could push, he could dodge. So each one has an even 33% chance to happen. So we've effectively now decreased the likelihood that you will dodge, or the opponent will dodge, because we've added yet another behavior. Now that could be good, could be bad. You might want to add some other flexibility.
Well, it modifies the difficulty, right?
Right. It does change things up. And in fact, that's going to be the idea of the behavior. We're going to see how we change that up even more. So here, we are going to now have walk forward, dodge left and right, and push really hard, so faster than I normally could. That accidentally makes a secondary effect of when he's far away from me, he's pushing really hard, just lets him move twice as fast. So now he has really a move, he has a charge, he has a dodge, and he has push at a certain speed and push really harder. But I haven't given all those states. But to the user, it looks like he has multiple states just from the context of what's happening when that guy moves. And that's sort of the neat thing about it, is that you don't necessarily have to build as many actions as the user perceives. You're basically a magician. You're creating illusions of intelligence. You're creating illusions of these actions. And you want the player to perceive what's going on in certain ways. You don't necessarily have to do it, much like the physics. It looks like we're doing cube checks. We're not. We're doing a simple circle check or radius check, and that is all. It's a perception that is important in AI, not actually what is occurring, at least for games. If you're trying to make an AI to take over the world, then it probably maybe needs some real intelligence. So that's not what we're concerned with here. So the illusion of intelligence is all that we're after, and the player's perception of that AI and what it does is the important part of how smart it thinks it will be. So our third maneuver, jumping back into the code here. And we're just going to pop in. And it's simple enough because effectively we're just going to copy our walk, which I didn't cover, which is set as the default case, just so that if we accidentally roll a bad number or we do something silly, it's going to always do something, which is move forward. But push is effectively exactly the same as you can see here, line for line, word for word, except at the end, I have m times behavior. And for what I said just a second ago, we wanted push to be 2 times. So really, you would just make it that. And now we have a push that's twice as hard as the normal walk
behavior. You're going to get slapped again for hard coding values.
I know. So we don't want that right now, or we won't want that in a second. So I'm just going to undo that so I don't have to change it again. But that's all there is to the push. So we now have our push. We have our walk. We have our dodge, and we have a decent AI that if we played at that point, he'd be reasonably good at the game. He He also throws in enough randomness and a little bit of actions that he can catch the player off guard. There is no apparent pattern, so we can't analyze the AI. We can't decide what he's going to do next. There's no pattern. It's random. So even though it's so simple, that little bit of randomness is nice because it gives it more, feels like more depth, more intelligence. Now, at the same time, the AI is fallible because he can't perceive the mat. He can't perceive that ring. So sometimes when you've got him on the edge, or when he's got you on the edge, he'll be like, I should dodge. And he'll swing out to the side and throw himself off the mat because you'll take advantage of it and keep shoving him to get him out in time. So he can make mistakes. He can, at the same time, he could reverse one on you when you're not paying attention. You run yourself right off the mat when he steps out of the way. So there's still mistakes to be made by the AI, which you can capitalize on. And at the same time, there are opportunities for you to make mistakes that it will capitalize on. And that's really what you're looking for in a good AI opponent. Not one that will always beat you, not one that you can always beat, but one that, you know, has some feel to it, has some life to it, feels like you're playing some.
You've got to have balance.
Yeah, it's got to have some balance there. And that's effectively what we've set up. All right, so let's just pop back over here for one last section as we're getting close to the end here. So, tweaking it, at this stage, the AI agent, it's a decent opponent for such a simple game. You know, you could ship this. We're good. balancing the time ranges for changing its maneuvers and the strength of that push become the main balancing factors, right? We have those settings for how hard you want them to push. So where I hard-coded that 2, you could change it to 3 or 4 or whatever to make it feel like he's really ramming the player hard, pushing him right off the mat, or a little bit weaker, or you could change that variably over time if you wanted to put levels in that would make it harder just by adding a little bit more to that value over time. That's a possibility, but those timing on when, how often it should switch from one maneuver to the next and back and forth, which we'll take a look at in a second, is important as well. What range of values do we want? It needs to stay in one behavior for a certain amount of time so the player knows what's happening. It can't just constantly be like half a second, switch to push, half a second, switch to dodge, half a second, switch to push. It's going to be too fast. The player's not even going to be able to react to what he sees happening to realize what the computer's doing before the computer's already changing what it's doing. And that starts to make it a little too difficult for the player. He feels a little confused. He doesn't know what's going on. You don't want that to happen. So we need the right amount of time, but not too long that it looks like the guy's just doing one thing and only one thing. All right, so the AI agent feels just a little bit shallow still if you play it a couple times through. It just does those same 3 actions in some kind of random combination, and that's it. We want to give it a little bit more depth across multiple play sessions, or to use the horribly coined word, we'd like to increase replayability of this game, which, you know, doesn't exist, but we'd like to do that by just giving you a different behavior each time you play for the AI to respond. So sometimes he'll do certain actions like dodge. Other times, he won't dodge. Other times, he won't push really hard. He'll just move a lot because he's angry and he's just determined and he's just going to constantly go for you. Never dodge, just keep trying to shove you, you know, slow turtle style and win the race. We're going to do that by giving it a behavior attribute, which is going to decide how we apply each of those maneuvers in each match. And that's why you saw that multiply by behavior and the if statement for the behavior. That's going to be that piece that does that. So let's jump in and we're going to take a look at that randomized behavior demo and the code that's going to control that. And I hit the wrong button. Out. There we go. All right, so again, we have M behavior in this state, we have M behavior in that state, and in the end, we don't have one for the default. So now, how is this going to change things? Well, this behavior is just going to be a number. It's going to be a simple value, but it's also an enumeration so that we can read what we want it to do. And if I peek at it, oh, it didn't peek the way I wanted it to. Oh, that's why I jumped on the wrong one. I'll just go to it. Anyway, so we're going to have easy mode. You got to have easy mode. And then we have angry, and we have smart. So smart is a value of 2, angry is a value of 1, easy is a value of 0. Now, if we jump back to see what we were trying to do, if this was 0, 0 minus 1, just minus 1, so that's going to effectively change the direction he's dodging in. So he'll always dodge to the left in easy mode, for example. Now, if this was smart mode, it would be a 2. 2 minus 1 is 1. So he's always going to dodge to the right. And of course, if this was 1, which is angry mode, 1 minus 1 is 0, so he's never ever going to dodge. In fact, when you do roll dodge, and he's supposed to be dodging, he's no longer going to move because 0 times anything times the direction is 0 added to his position. He stays exactly where he is. He never moves. Okay, so in angry mode, no dodging. That's what we have determined. And in easy mode, dodge to the left. In smart mode, dodge to the right. So each now behavior has its own flavor of dodge. Okay, and that's what we've done. Also, as long as we're not angry, then once we've done dodge, we're done. However, if we are angry, we skip the break. And if you've used switch cases before and you've done a lot of programming, you realize that when we don't break, we fall through into the next case and we do it. So now, instead of just sitting on his butt when he's angry, because that doesn't seem right, he's angry. When he rolls dodge, he's just going to fall through, do nothing, and then end up pushing anyways. And now push. And because behavior is in here in push, and he's angry, that's a value of 1. So he goes ahead and pushes just as hard as he would if he was just walking, and that multiply by 1 wasn't there. However, in smart mode, this behavior is a 2, so now he's pushing 2 times as much. And in easy mode, it's a 0, so now he sits on his butt, and he doesn't have a push maneuver. So he'll only have walk and dodge to the left in easy. In angry mode, he'll never dodge, and he'll pretty much just trudge along in your face all day long, regardless of whether or not he's pushing or walking at that same speed. And finally, in smart mode, he will push twice as hard as he does when he walks, and he will dodge always to the right. So we've now effectively multiplied the different kinds of setups that could happen. All we have to do now is decide which one of these behaviors he's in at the beginning of each match. So much like we decide, here's how we change maneuvers. So again, when this delay runs out, we're just going to say however many states there are in a maneuver, which happens to be 3. So I do a random number, mod it by 3, so it gives me a 0, 1, or 2 answer. That's what state I've decided he's now going to do. Delay, this is where we're changing that range of time before he decides when to choose again. In this case, a minimum of 1 second plus 0 to 2 seconds or 2 point whatever seconds more. Okay, so there's always going to be a minimum of 1 second that the AI is doing one of these actions before it ever changes its mind to try to dodge or try to push or walk after that. All right, so that should give the player that minimum enough time to recognize what it is the AI is doing before the AI decides to try to do something else. And if you don't feel that that's enough, go ahead and just increase that to 2 seconds or 1.5 seconds, something like that. And of course, go ahead and if you want longer actions, you would change that. And that's how we do that part of the random choices that we go about doing things. In terms of when do we set the behavior, we pretty much, by default, when we construct one, set his behavior to easy. But we also, if I grab that, jump through the code quickly, I should be setting it down here in the sumo.dx. There it is. All right. When we create the enemy also, I can hand in what I would like him to be as this third parameter, and I've chosen a random behavior from 0 to 2, so 0, 1, or 2, and that's exactly what our case statement has. So he's going to be easy, angry, or whatever. And one other place we change it, right here, is whenever we load the game. So in other words, whenever a new game starts because you won or you beat him, we go ahead and give him another behavior to set up and to use and to fight you differently. So now when we play the game 3 or 4 or 5 times in a row, he might trick us and do something different that he wasn't doing before, or he acts completely as if he's a different fighter, or now he's mad and he's just trying to push me and that's it, he's never dodging, and so on, with just a couple simple extra lines of code. That's really all we added.
It adds a lot of depth to the game too, right?
That's right.
And replayability, which is always important when you're making a game, right? You want people to come back and play it over and over again.
That's right. So, and that's the overall goal of really that behavior part of the setup. And now my slides are all the way back to the beginning. Yeah, so that's really all there is to the AI. It's simple, it's basic, but it gives enough depth. It gives that play. It does what the AI is meant to do. Okay, it's not too hard, it's not too easy, and all of those things that we talked about earlier on. And really, that's what you are looking for when you set up an AI like that. So it does present a challenge to the player. It appears to be intelligent, and at the same time, it is fallible. Right? Those are the three key points that I always try to get people when they're first going out trying to make their own AI. Those are the three things that you want to keep forefront in your mind whenever you're developing something like that. All right, so where do we go from there? Do we leave it just as it is? For this game, I say we leave it just where it is. That's good enough. It's got a good depth. It's got a good range. We're happy with it, and we could go and take it out into the wide world after that. You may not be happy with it. You might want to improve it to the next level of an AI agent known as the model-based reflex agent, where it now, when it goes to do something, it checks, what did I do previously in the past? And if I choose this action, what do I expect to happen? So it starts to have a little bit of a memory and starts to consider the ramifications of its action.
It appears like it's thinking.
It starts to, well, the other one appeared as if he was thinking, did
true,
it not?
True, true.
The illusion is there that it was, but it wasn't. And in this case, you might want it to, for example, check a new sensor, such as how far away from the middle of the mat am I? If I'm way over here, but the player is on the outside of me, I should consider to keep pushing. However, if he's inside of me towards the inside of the mat, I should dodge, right? Mm-hmm. That's this level of AI. You're starting to get into the point where he's considering what happens if he does an action. So should I dodge because I'm going to get pushed out, or should I continue to push because I'm going to push him out? That's the kind of AI level that you're looking at when you get up to this next step, which is the model-based reflex agent. Yeah.
Very cool.
All right, so from this point, we've put together a big game, basically. We've got some things going on. You've learned the basics of DirectX. And there's that DirectX 11 FPS game project that I kept mentioning. It's a great next step for you from here after you've played around with this project a little more and you've tweaked it, worked with it, understand the concepts of it, compare it to this other project here and see, again, what they've done to expand their the engine effectively. They've mm-hmm. pulled out, obviously, my game code is different than their game code, but the structure is the same. In fact, the camera class is exactly the same, more or less. The move look controller is the same because I effectively reverse engineered theirs, broke it down into this to make even more simpler stepping stone for you to get into development with DirectX. So this is the next step that you may want to take or look at. Of course, we have the DirectX APIs, which can break down Direct3D, DirectX Math, X Input, for anything we didn't cover that specifically you want or you need for your applications. And there's also another simple tutorial there that takes you from the vertices to the rendering stage, that large module that we had to do that took, you know, hours. That is a step-by-step also process if you want to do it in a simpler abstract way without any of our game concepts splitting it up and moving the code all around. I recommend you go look at that third link there. It'll step you through in a direct manner, just a direct single kind of class application that lets you get something on your screen rendering.
Mm-hmm.
From there, wrapping it up, what did we cover today? DirectX 11 is obviously a powerful suite of APIs. It has a lot of depth to it.
Definitely.
There's lots to learn there, right? But if you can think it up, you can dream it up, this is going to allow you to create that crazy game that you've always imagined and get it out there graphically. Even if it's intensive, it doesn't matter. You can do that with these APIs and bring it all together and build it out as a Windows Store app or desktop app or Xbox One and so on and so on. You know, it works on all the platforms and you can bring it all around. The learning curve is a little steep. Okay, we're trying to break it down as simple as possible. The hardest part is, that, like I said, that one module where we're pretty much getting something to show up,
yeah.
Breaking it down from the vertices all the way through. Once you understand that process, that's pretty much the hardest part, really, to setting up the entire system. After that, you're just doing the same kind of steps every time to make a different object, different model, render it differently, and then it's just tweaking little things like maybe the shader or the way you optimize the vertices with a triangle strip or list and so on.
The foundation rarely changes, really.
Right. You still have to set up a description for your buffer. You still have to get that buffer over. You still have to fill in the data and so on and so on. Those steps never change, just what it is that you're doing with it. So there is also a poll at the end.
Yeah, so yeah, please, you know, take time to fill out the poll and give us some feedback and let us know what you thought of the presentation today. It's always nice to know how we've done.
And so we can come back.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely take a chance to fill that out. And I'd like to take a couple of minutes just to, like, you know, thank everybody for spending the day with us. It was really enjoyable for us. I hope it was enjoyable for you and you learned a lot.
Yep. Yeah. I can't wait to see your sumo games starting to appear in the store, so yeah, I can test them out. That's fine, you know. Make sure hit you up with some tweets or something so I know that it's out there. So
yeah, please. Yeah, feel free to message me on Twitter and let me know where your games are and where we can find them so we can play them and share them with the rest of our...
give you comments.
Friends, yes. Exactly. Yeah, well, so thank you very much for tuning in today. I really appreciate it, and I know Brian feels the same way.
Yeah, so. No, it was a great time. Happy coding.
Yeah. Take care.